How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot of topics to get into today. No pay-per-views this weekend, but next weekend is the WWE Battleground pay-per-view. We're going to talk about that show. Another rematch with Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton, which obviously there's a lot of stuff to talk about there because they have wrestled twice. Daniel Bryan has won the title twice. He has not held on to the title twice. And I have absolutely no idea how they're trying to convince us that this time he might really win it. We're going to talk about that here on the program. Plus, a lot of stuff going on in TNA wrestling. Hulk Hogan, at the last set of tapings, may or may not have been written out of storyline forever. He's done with the company unless he signs a new deal. Is he going to go to WWE? Is he going to re-sign with TNA? We don't know. What should he do? We'll talk to Mike Sempervivi about that. Plus, SmackDown, we'll talk about SummerSlam business, was down from last year. Why was that? Was it the main events? Was it the fact that, I don't know, Daniel Bryan wasn't taken seriously as a contender? He was granted the title shot by Triple H as opposed to winning it. Was it CM Punk being portrayed as a skinny guy going up against Brock Lesnar? What was the reason for business being down? Or was it none of the above? Was it just a pay-per-view that didn't do as well as usual? We'll talk about that. Plus the ROH iPay-per-view situation. Mike watched Superstars. Got to get an update on that. Talk about the New Japan iPay-per-view, which took place last night, as well as a fighter who passed away cutting weight. Did not take place in this country, but should things change? Something we've been talking about for a long time now. We'll talk more about that here on the program. Plus more on Jones versus Gustafson, which we didn't have a chance to talk about last week. Ultimate Fighter for this week, Mayweather and Alvarez set a pay-per-view record. We're going to talk about all that and so much more. 2 full hours of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So stick around. Back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app, as well as the Sirius Satellite Radio app. And we are available at iHeart.com, iHeartRadio, the talk radio portal. Search for Wrestling Observer. And in all of these different places, including at WrestlingObserver.com, replays are available. A replay of this show goes up immediately after it ends up at WrestlingObserver.com. So if you tune in late and you want to hear the entire show, head to WrestlingObserver.com after the show ends, and the replay will be there for you to download to your listening device. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, Admin Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, up at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, what's going on out there on the East Coast?
You know, I'm actually, believe it or not, getting ready for hockey season. I've got a bunch of fantasy hockey drafts coming up. And I thought, you know, maybe after the show you could give me some advice on who I should take.
Oh, yeah?
I was thinking either you or Lance Storm, since you guys are both huge hockey fans.
I know absolutely nothing about hockey. I know absolutely nothing about
Canadian
almost any sport, actually. But I still knew, after thinking about it for a while, that the team that CM Punk was talking about on Raw was the Chicago Blackhawks. I know enough that I know some of the major sports teams for each city. Like Seattle is the Seahawks, for example. I think Portland has the Trailblazers. I don't know what sport it is, but I just know that's what they have. But I have absolutely no idea what's going on in hockey. I think the Seattle, I don't know what our team is. What is it?
But for hockey, you have none, actually.
Oh, that might explain it. But I've been to hockey games around here.
Well, yeah, plenty of minor league games and things like that. I think that the closest team to you is actually the Vancouver Canucks.
The Canucks! That's right. Well, I can't help you with your fantasy hockey draft. Is that what it is, a fantasy draft?
It is indeed, yes. You get a bunch of players, it's based off stats, and it just gives sports fans something else to go mental about while watching their games.
I was going to say, what do you need a fantasy team for when you can just watch a real team?
I don't even know. I always thought it was a dumb idea at the beginning, you know, rotisserie baseball and fantasy baseball and things like that. I was like, who could get into such things? And then fantasy football came around, and I don't think, if you know anything about football fans, we tend to be a passionate type.
Do you get prizes?
Yeah, well, it depends on what kind of league you're in. There's buy-ins where you put up, like, you know, $100 a person, and whoever wins it at the end gets the money, things like that. Although some people just like doing this for fun because they just love stats. Mookie Ghana, I could see off our board, is a big stat guy. I can see him being into all of these sorts of things.
Hmm. Well, here's a stat for you. WWE Battleground is the first ever Battleground pay-per-view.
Yes, it is.
Isn't that exciting?
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
So well-placed, so well-timed. It's pretty much a superfluous pay-per-view.
I'm interested in the fact that they decided to call it Battleground this year, and last year it was called Over the Limit. What difference does it make?
Because you can sell more things with the Battleground name. You can have a WWE Battleground game, a Battleground board game. You can come out with Battleground action figures. I think what needs to be remembered, and when it comes to WWE things, a lot of it is, what can we market out of that deal? And that's kind of, you know, this is why one of the reasons we have theme pay-per-views, the Elimination Chamber and things like that. I mean, you want to sell the Elimination Chamber, you know, the little toy at Christmas time and have a little cage and all that sort of stuff. And that's something that, you know, as hardcore wrestling fans, we think about, you know, what's going on TV and all sorts of things like that. And it needs to be remembered. A lot of this, whether you like it or not, is based around marketing.
I'm 38 now, and I guess I'm getting old. Maybe we need to have a youngster on as a guest, like a 12-year-old or something like that, and ask them about these names. Because when I was little, there was only four pay-per-views. There was WrestleMania, which was WrestleMania, and then there was SummerSlam, which was the summertime version of WrestleMania, and then there was the Survivor Series, where they had the 8-man eliminations or the 10-man eliminations, and then there was the Royal Rumble, which was the big battle royal for the title shot. So, basically, they all had a theme. Not like the theme pay-per-views nowadays, but you knew that at Survivor Series you were going to get eliminations. You knew at Royal Rumble you were going to get a battle royal. You knew that at WrestleMania you were going to get all the culmination of all the big matches over the last year. And same thing with SummerSlam, except it was a summertime version of it. So every pay-per-view name actually meant something. But nowadays, I mean, does Battleground really mean anything to anybody? Or No Way Out? Or any of these? Same thing with, like, TNA. It's like, does Against All Odds really mean anything to anybody nowadays? I mean, do young fans go like, man, I can't wait till Against All Odds? Or is it just like the name of a pay-per-view? Because it seems to me that that's what it is.
It is. It's just the name of a pay-per-view.
And, you know, so why bother changing them, I guess, is my question.
Well, I don't know. See, what's more troubling, I guess, because you want to mix it up. You get, you know, again, this is, why do so many products go through, you know, facelifts and changes and things like that? It's just somebody's getting paid to brainstorm and think up things. I think what's worse is when you have the themed pay-per-views, but the problem is you're stuck with a themed pay-per-view, whether you need to have an event or not. I mean, that's been one of the whole things where I've been happy they haven't brought War Games back, because look at the Elimination Chamber, look at Money in the Bank, look at a lot of these things where they've backed themselves into corners booking-wise because they have to build towards the gimmick, not having the feud where the gimmick, you know, ends up being the payoff at the end, and we've seen that cause problems. Punk and Ryback. Since they're back together now, linked together with the whole Paul Heyman thing, last year we talked about that, with how are they going to get themselves out of booking themselves into the corner. And that's where TNA, that's one of the things they took from TNA, but, you know, seemingly TNA was doing it first and then WWE followed up on it by doing those sorts of things. That's what's even more troubling than just having the, you know, somebody coming up with wacky generic names, when you actually have the big events that are in theory supposed to mean something, and you have trouble building back to them.
You're the first guy I've ever heard that doesn't want to see War Games back.
Oh, no, look, I would love to see War Games back. I really, really would. I wish, you know, have that. Again, Survivor Series, you know, it doesn't mean what it used to mean when we were kids. I mean, even though a lot of people, it was a goofy concept, you had a bunch of feuds and a bunch of stories going on that you could tie in together, whether it was, all right, so Greg Valentine's feuding with Ronnie Garvin, and you have Hacksaw Duggan feuding with some other guy, and then you put them all together on the same team and you build up to something, you know, that, you know, you can't do that anymore. But you could do War Games at Survivor Series. In a lot of ways, it would make, you know, great sense to do something like that. But I don't want to see them do that if it's just becomes a generic, just another thing. And I know you can't hold on. You know, you're shackled by your youth and what you remember and how awesome it was to have War Games. But with the, you know, the way today's landscape is, I would rather not see them bastardize it, you know, more than they have to, because I don't want it to be just another pay-per-view. That was a really cool concept, and because it hasn't been in WWE before, it could really mean something. But then, you know, that I don't want to see it mean something once and then have it be completely bastardized with a team of, you know, Ron Killings and, you know, no offense to them, Zack Ryder and guys like that in it, where it just it loses its luster. And they've done that so many times.
I will admit that Battleground is a far more exciting name than Over the Limit. If I were a little kid, I'd rather get Battleground than Over the Limit.
I can't, you know, say anything about that there. That's absolutely true.
Now, it is followed by Hell in a Cell, and breaking news here. Not really breaking news, but there has been a lot of discussion. There are people in WWE.
Pay-per-views that you have to back into.
There are people very strongly pushing to get rid of one of these pay-per-views. The idea of two pay-per-views in October. I don't even know why they have 13. I mean, I've mentioned before, 12 is ideal to me. One a month, 3 weeks, 4 weeks of television to build it up, and then boom, you're good to go. The 3 weeks in between pay-per-views to me is just, I don't see the benefit of it. I mean, I guess you make a little bit more money because none of these pay-per-views are money losers, but I think that for the fans, to keep people in the habit, it should just be one pay-per-view a month, and not less. Not less either. I think TNA kind of made a mistake, but also kind of didn't. Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer. You can also check us out on the Sirius Satellite Radio app, obviously, and iHeart.com. iHeartRadio. We're in the Talk Radio portal. 60 million subscribers at iHeart.com. So make sure you head up there and check that out. Replay is available at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot of free shows up at WrestlingObserver.com, so head up to the front page. Down on the right-hand side, latest free radio shows. Check them out. And if you like what you hear, obviously, you can sign up to the website and get more. We'll talk about that later on. The WWE Battleground pay-per-view is coming up. And the main event, again, it's Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton for the WWE title. No stipulation. The first time, it was at SummerSlam. It was Daniel Bryan versus John Cena. And then Randy Orton cashed in and won the title. So Daniel Bryan won and then didn't get the belt. And so then they did the second match in September at Night of Champions, and Daniel Bryan won, but they did the fast count gimmick, and so Hunter stripped him of the title. So that's two matches, two pay-per-views in a row, where Daniel Bryan has won the title, and then they've taken it off of him. Now, if they had some sort of storyline where it was guaranteed that if Daniel Bryan won this title, they weren't taking it away from him. I don't know how you would even do that. Referee's decision is final. No way in, no way out. I mean, if this were Hell in a Cell, it would be better, but it's not. It's just a regular singles match. And if I were a normal, if this were not my job, if I were your normal average fan, and I watched wrestling when I wanted to, and I didn't watch wrestling when I didn't want to, I only bought the pay-per-views when I really wanted to buy them, I would not buy this pay-per-view. Why would I? I have been conditioned to believe that no matter what happens, Daniel Bryan will not be allowed to get this belt. And they have done absolutely nothing on television to convince me otherwise. So, what are they doing here?
They're telling a story. They're telling a story, and they are drawing this out. And I'm not as anti as a lot of people are. I don't think this is going to kill Daniel Bryan. I think they are pushing it. The problem is
it won't kill him. But who would buy the show?
Well, that's the thing. And the thing you don't know what's going to kill him until you actually find out what kills him, and then you can't get it back again. But no, I mean, yeah, there is no reason to buy this show. If nothing else, you just look at the fact that Hell in a Cell is coming up. You see the way the story's been developing, and, you know, logically, you know, they haven't given you any reason to go, okay, I got to see what happens on this show. I can't wait, you know, less than, you know, 24 hours to Monday night to find out what happened on it, and then wait and order Hell in the Cell because that's one of the ones that a lot of people will no-brainer order just because of the gimmick it is. So, no, I mean, you're right. There really isn't. They have not given you a reason as of yet. You know, we'll find out on Monday where I have got to see this to see what happens, when even the most basic viewer will probably go, okay, they're going to get Daniel Bryan out of this again. And they'll strip him of the title again. He'll win it, he'll lose it, and then I can just wait to see what happens on Monday and see how they're going to handle Hell in the Cell, because that, as just the average fan, I think that would be the most logical thing that they're coming up with, looking at going, okay, that's probably what it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't think they're killing Daniel Bryan or anything, but they're killing my interest in buying this pay-per-view. There's a big difference.
There's a lot of people that I think that are very upset, though, over, you know, you're hurting him by going, how is he, you know, legitimately a contender or anything, you keep taking it off of him, bastardizes him in the title. And I gotta be honest, I don't necessarily agree with that wholeheartedly, because I don't think it's going to matter. I think they are rolling the dice by extending this out so much, because I think that there will be some sort of shenanigans that take place in this that ultimately lead up to Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton at Hell in the Cell. And, you know, giving him the belt three times and taking it off of him, you know, on paper, is really stupid. I think they'll be able to pull it off. I really think they will. It on paper, it's not the smartest thing to do, because, again, you've given a guy the belt three times and taken it off of him.
Well, twice. But I do think that...
But I mean, I say, okay, if he wins it again on Sunday, and if he doesn't win it on Sunday, that hurts.
Sure. I think that... Hell in a Cell, I'm not even sure they're doing this match a fourth time. That's a lot of times to do this match. And I guess we can just move to this. The idea is, at least as of a couple of days ago, that through the end of the year, the big feud is probably going to be Randy Orton and the Big Show. Now, I don't know if that's going to be for the title or not, so I'll ask you. If the big feud through the end of the year is Randy Orton versus the Big Show, do you feel that means that Randy Orton is going to end up the champion and feud with Big Show over the belt? Or is Daniel Bryan going to win the title, move on to a feud with somebody else, and then Randy Orton and the Big Show break off, and they're doing a feud with no title on the line?
That's exactly what I think.
So I think Bryan wins?
Yeah, I think they're going to roll the dice. I mean, and ultimately, whether he does it now or if he does it at Hell in the Cell, and again, I think they can actually go that far with it by having that fourth match. And again, it's not on paper the smartest thing to do, but I think that's what they're going to do, and I think they'll actually be able to overall pull it off, whether it's great or not. You know, we'll see what happens, but I think they'll actually go that direction with Daniel Bryan, you know, battling the Machine, and then you have Randy Orton and Big Show split off doing their thing.
All right, so if Daniel Bryan wins the title and Randy Orton goes off and wrestles somebody else, who do we have that slides into the number one heel spot to oppose Daniel Bryan for the title? Because from looking at the roster right here, the options appear limited.
Oh, very, very. And again, I don't know. I've had to look at the pay-per-view lineup coming up here and everything too, because I know, you know, Survivor Series and everything else, but I don't know. But that's, I think, the direction that they would go. It would seem to make the most sense, and they will get somebody. And again, I don't know if somebody makes a turn and decides that, hey, I'd rather work with the McMahons than fighting against them or something like that. But again, I'd have to look at the pay-per-view line because there's ways out of this. They could do something short, and I'm not saying do a bum of the month club or anything, but you could have, and again, this is a bad example because they won't use him, but just say a Claudio or Antonio Cesaro, leading up to the next pay-per-view or a Jack Swagger or somebody like that. And again, it's not the most optimal thing or anything like that, but when you tie whoever that person is with working with the McMahon, Helmsley regime, you'll be able to pull off the story.
We've also got the CM Punk Ryback match, which I don't think is going to be at the end of the storyline. And this one is interesting because Ryback, the hottest he ever was when he faced CM Punk for the title at Hell in a Cell, because they lucked into something, basically. They lucked into a Hell in a Cell. Actually, they were lucky and unlucky. They lucked into a Hell in a Cell match where he had Ryback, who was undefeated, against CM Punk, who had been champion for like 390 days or whatever at that point. So one streak was going to end in that cell, and the streak ended up being Ryback's streak. And then at that point, he just lost and lost and lost and lost, pay-per-view after pay-per-view. He lost and he lost, and eventually he was a geek. And now they're trying to rebuild him. They've put him with Paul Heyman. They're giving him a push. In fact, they're giving him a big enough push that he may be in a pivotal match at WrestleMania this year, but that's another story entirely. So the question is, he is now going to this match with CM Punk. CM Punk, on the other hand, he lost to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. He lost to Paul Heyman at Night of Champions. And now he's going to this match at Battleground with Ryback. And so we're now in a situation almost exactly like we were a year ago, where it does neither guy any favors to lose. If Punk loses, it's like his third straight major pay-per-view loss, which I guess of the two of them, it probably hurts him the least, to be honest. And then you've got Ryback, who's trying to rebuild himself from losing 8 million matches. So who loses this match?
Yeah, I'm not trying to compare to the two, but, Rock would lose to everybody. And because of the situation they're in, because of the story, because of Paul Heyman, and not that Curtis Axel is a major player in this. I mean, he's been, they've turned him into basically a geek, unfortunately for him. At least he's still got Heyman with him right now. But, I would, look, if Punk could lose and it doesn't matter, because you'll have the shenanigans, you'll have all that other stuff, and it doesn't affect him at all. I'm not saying he's Teflon forever, but he's certainly Teflon for right now where, Ryback wins. It's going to be best case scenario, for moving on because Punk doesn't need the win. He doesn't lose anything. He could cut a promo a year from now saying, anything he wants to, a pipe bomb promo about how they made me lose to Ryback. It's so easy to get out of it with him where, he's the one who should take the loss in that scenario. And another name, actually, to throw up there, and again, he's been on the JBL and Cole show, and he's kind of got this new gimmick of the hashtag Bad News Barrett. Wade Barrett is still floating out there, and I don't know what their status is with him or anything
like
that.
Hold on a second. I hate to interrupt. Yep. What's going on this program that nobody can watch unless they're on the internet?
What, the JBL and Cole show?
Yes.
That they love to hype up so much?
Yes.
At the end, like Ted DiBiase was giving Ted DiBiase Jr. was giving his farewell speech, on the JBL and Cole show at the end, and Wade Barrett pops up and he just interferes with it, and says, he cuts it off. You're not employed here. Nobody wants to hear what you have to say. And then boom, the hashtag goes up, the graphic goes up, Bad News Barrett, and Ted DiBiase gives a sad face. And Barrett's been popping up, and again, he's a guy, I don't know why they've done the things that they've done with him, but he's a believable guy and a believable character, and I think a guy that, does get a legitimate reaction from people.
All right, hold that thought. We'll talk about Barrett when we get back. You're listening to Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone or the Sirius Satellite Radio app. Search for Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer. Also online, iHeart.com. The iHeart Radio Talk Radio Portal. We're up there. Archives as well. You can also check out the show immediately after it airs. If you tune in halfway through the show and you missed the first half, that's fine. Go to WrestlingObserver.com. The entire show is archived on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com immediately after the show goes off the air. 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. You can always check it out. We also have archives as well. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always check out our website at WrestlingObserver.com. We have radio shows. More radio shows than you could even imagine. I checked 6,000 radio shows in our archives. We do 10 to 15 new radio shows every single week. All of those are available to subscribers. It's only $10.99 a month. If you sign up, you get full access to everything. Every new show that we do, every archive show that we've ever done. If you love this program, and I just got a letter about a week ago, actually, from somebody who said that I listen to your plugs every week for a year, and I finally signed up, and I wish I'd done it a year ago. There's so much stuff up there. As noted, 6,000 archived radio shows, new shows every single day. I've got two shows yet to go later on tonight. I've got a show with my buddy Vinny, got a show with Dave Meltzer, both of them coming up later on tonight. All of these available if you sign up, $10.99 a month. Go up there and check it out. It's WrestlingObserver.com. Try it out for a month. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But if you do like it, you'll never, ever run out of pro wrestling or mixed martial arts audio, because honestly, if I fell off a cliff tonight, that's still 6,000 radio shows you'd have to go through, and it'd take you a long time to do it. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking about the hashtag bandit. What's his name?
The hashtag bandit. No, it's Bad News Barrett.
Bad News Barrett. What's hashtag have to do with this? He should be the hashtag hermit or something.
It's all about... No, if there's going to be a hashtag hermit, and he's the biggest hermit known to man, that hermit would be Ezekiel Jackson.
Well, that's true.
Ezekiel Jackson, still employed.
He is still employed.
And no offense to him, I'm glad he's making the money and everything, but, you know, Big E Langston, I think, probably usurped his spot right away.
Big E is still around, everybody. I know
a
you haven't seen him much. He's on Superstars. By the way, let's since you mentioned it, let's get a quick Superstars review for those listening that never watch Superstars. Is it worth the hour?
You know, there's worse hours. It's not as good as it was at the beginning. Obviously, they tried to really feature either a big name match or a high quality match. You know, say a Cesaro and a Daniel Bryan that went 20 minutes. You know,
wasn't that main event?
Say again.
Wasn't that main event?
Well, oh, no, I'm sorry, that's the name of the show. I'm sorry, not Superstars, Main Event.
I see, I was completely baffled, because there is a Superstars, Mike.
Yes, that's right. That's usually for international consumption, correct?
Yes, so you didn't watch Superstars, you watched Main Event.
Main Event on ION, yes, I did.
All right, well, give us the Main Event review for the week.
Fandango teaming up with Big E Langston, a natural team.
Now, I heard the spoilers, and I was like, why in God's name is Fandango teaming up with Big E Langston? Was it explained, or was it just a random team?
No, this was like 1985, you know, TBS Championship Wrestling, where it was just like, you know, Sam Houston and the Italian Stallion would show up. I mean, essentially, that's what it was. I think it was a match set up for ring introductions more than anything. Fandango came out with Summer Rae, comes in, and it was never really explained during the show. It was just Big E is not Dolph's heavy anymore. They said that again. And, yeah, he's looking out for himself, apparently by teaming with Fandango against the Usos. But, yeah, so you had that. And you also had the Big Show knocking out and pinning Damian Sandow, which I would assume now puts him as the number one contender for Alberto Del Rio's title, right?
I don't even know what makes anybody anything anymore.
5 million people on the roster. Ezekiel Jackson, we said one. JTG, Curt Hawkins, anybody. you have the guy, and granted, I know not a whole lot of people watch Ion and Main Event. Christ, I didn't even remember.
Actually, over a million people do. More people watch that show than watch Impact some weeks.
Really? Well, yeah. There you go. But so it's an even dumber reason then, with all of those people that you have on the roster, that Big Show's got to knock out and pin Damian Sandow. And the Biggie Langston Dolph Ziggler, or I'm sorry, Biggie Langston Fandango Usos match was the one that led off the show. It's reminiscent for those who haven't seen it in a lot of ways. All right, not in a lot of ways, but in a way to Saturday Night's Main Event. They kind of start with their biggest match first. Then they have, you know, the secondary match that, you know, say the semi-main event in the middle, and then a match, you know, usually a short match at the end. This time it was Curtis Axel, winning his match. I forget even who he faced, but he won his match. Oh, it was Justin Gabriel. So they didn't even get a whole lot of time. It was just, again, Big Show, and then telling the story of the Big Show and how conflicted he is, asking Alex Riley, who now does commentary, what it means to Big Show in the locker room and how the locker room looks at him. So there was storyline advancement that way. But again, because that's all the match was going to be about, why did you sacrifice the guy who won Money in the Bank and a guy who people like to root for, or at least like to get, you know, give a reaction to, Damian Sandow? To me, it was completely pointless.
You know, when you mention a million viewers for Impact and for Main Event, Superstars, I guess Superstars. Actually, around the world, probably a million people watch that show. I don't know. But when I really think about that, it's like, it's really hard as a pro wrestling company to draw less than a million viewers. You know what I mean? Like, Impact managed it, but they had to go head-to-head against Raw in order to do it. In their own time slot on Spike TV, it's almost impossible to not get 1 million viewers. You know, Main Event does 1 million viewers. SmackDown does 2 million, 2.5 million. Raw does, you know, 4 million. You know, they get a lot of people watching these shows. It's very, very difficult to have national television and not do 1 million viewers. And so the plight of TNA is even more astonishing to me, because I think about, like, this show that you're all listening to right now. And unfortunately, a million people don't listen to Wrestling Observer Live. But you know what? If a million people listen to this show, I'd be living on an island somewhere that I owned. I'd be living on my own island. Like, how can you have a million viewers watching your wrestling program on Spike TV and not be rolling in money? Or at least not losing tremendous amounts of money. You know what I mean? How is that possible?
I would you get to that island via gold boat, by the way?
Yeah. How else would I get there? Either that or a golden airplane. One or the other.
Well, you know, I'll answer that with a question for you. With the exception of WWE, who has ever done it? And that's the, you know, again...
Well, hold on. We're talking about a program that actually had national television. And in that case, we're talking about WCW, which actually made hundreds of millions of dollars when they were doing things right, and WWE. I guess an exception would probably be ECW on TNN. They didn't quite do it, but to me, it's just like, and I'm not saying that this is easy, believe me, but when you've got a million people who will watch your programming every single week. And then you think about, all right, what kind of different ways could we make money? Well, we could make money off pay-per-view. We could make money off licensing. We could make money off merchandise. We could make money off all of these different revenue streams. And in fact, if you look at WWE's breakdown, you can see that, in fact, they don't rely on any one revenue stream. They make a lot of money off television. They make a lot of money off pay-per-view. But they're also making money off merchandise, internet advertising, DVDs, all of these different revenue streams. That's where they make all of their money. If any one of those revenue streams went down, they've still got so many different revenue streams to pick it up. And when you look at how they lose money, it's stuff that they don't have to do. You don't have to have a movie division that bleeds money. You don't have to have that. And I look at TNA and it's like, It's amazing, really, that they can manage to lose so much money year after year.
You're right. And You're right. They don't have to sign guys to the contracts that they do. They don't have to have certain guys there. They don't diversify. And after all of these years, the bottom line, you know, because all of what you're saying is correct. You, again, with the merchandise, with all of those things that, you know, running a business, you're not running a wrestling company anymore. You have to run a business, and you have to think about all those things and get the right people in place to do those things. If you take people, again, the biggest criticism against, you know, TNA at the beginning was you have all of these old WCW guys who, whether in production or this or that or the other, who couldn't exactly get the job done there, or if they did, it was in the past, and they, you know, were not forward-thinking being able to do it in the future, and those things atrophied, and they ran down, and they never got off, you know, in most cases, just never even got off the ground. But all that to the side, the biggest thing with TNA is you've had a million viewers for I don't know how long, and you couldn't translate, you know, none of that could translate into pay-per-view buys. You couldn't, no matter what you did, you couldn't sell those people into buying the product. And the times that it spiked, and there were a few, and obviously the most notable examples being Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe, when you had it and it did spike, you didn't do anything afterwards. You didn't back it up afterwards. And that's I think, the most amazing part about TNA, and if God knows if the book is ever fully written on, you know, the downfall of TNA, the biggest one is just flat out they could not sell people on buying their product. They'll watch it for free. They're entertained. They're great. Fine. They're wrestling fans. Whatever. Those people would not come out of their pocket for you, and that's just absolutely amazing after all these years.
That's my great concern about writing a book about the death of TNA if it goes under. Would any TNA fans actually buy it? Because they have a bad track record of buying anything. Maybe I would do it in the hopes of I wouldn't lose any money doing it, but in a best case scenario, the book might make more money than TNA ever made.
It's possible.
I actually kind of feel bad burying them to such a degree right now, but I mean, really, you got over a million people watching the show, and you couldn't get more than 8,000 of them to buy your pay-per-view. How is that even possible?
And that's the thing, too. I mean, they announced Baltimore, and I'm probably going to try to make it to that show in November. I had a blast at the show in Norfolk. You've had a blast at the shows, you know, the house shows they've had out that way. It's fun. I mean, and no, look, there's guys there that I know, that you've corresponded with, that you're actually friends with, the whole nine yards. I don't want to see TNA go out of business. I don't want to see just WWE. I want there to be other wrestling. I want there to be other wrestling on national TV. But with that said, it's hard not to bury him because it's not really a burial. It's just the truth. And if flat out, it's just the truth. And if they had some great retort for why people who don't come out of their pockets to spend on them, no matter what anybody says on the internet or any writer or any follower or any of that sort of stuff, any retort that they have, you know, for us about the type of show that we do in talking about them, explain why people don't come out of their pocket, these loyal fans that you've had. You've done, you know, in theory, you're a business. You should have asked these people, why don't you pay for us?
Here's a quick stat.
And they don't do that.
Here's a quick stat before we go to the break. WWE has about 3 to 4 times the number of viewers for Raw as Impact has. 3 to 4 times. Meanwhile, a bad WWE pay-per-view does 13 times the number of buyers as a TNA pay-per-view. How is that even possible? Something to think about, everybody, as we head to the break. When we come back, more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and 10 minutes, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a short segment here. Mike, I guess just a quick answer. We'll talk about this more in depth as the show goes on. But at the last set of TNA tapings this past Thursday, they taped a storyline where TNA, Dixie Carter, president of the company, she gave Hulk Hogan an ultimatum, and he could either stay or go. basically align himself with her or not. And he chose to walk out of the company. And she responded by getting on her knees, hugging his leg, begging him not to go. And that may, in fact, be his swan song. Now, two questions. Number one, do you think that Hulk Hogan will return? And number two, if Hulk Hogan does not return, was this the stupidest exit TNA could have possibly booked?
Last one first, yes. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know what kind of creative control you have where you have your new heel boss and your supposedly good guy general manager and who happens to be Hulk Hogan. Yeah, dumb. But then, again, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of acumen there anyway. It's been, you know, said a zillion times about people who have come through there. You know, nice person, doesn't exactly know what she's doing, probably the dumbest possible thing she could have done. As far as whether he comes back or not, you know what, yes, if he doesn't get a WWE deal, and that would be the only thing, whatever money they're going to give him, unless it's absolutely nothing, he could use it. It's relatively easy money, so go ahead and take the money. So if he doesn't get more somewhere else, I honestly believe he'll be back. It may not be in the same exact role, but there, yeah, he'll be back. As long as Bischoff has something to do with it as well, again, that door is always going to be there.
All right, we're going to head to our hourly break. We will be back in 7 minutes. We got a lot of stuff coming up, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, so stick around. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the Sirius Satellite Radio app, iHeart.com, iHeartRadio, the talk radio portal, 60 million subscribers, so many places to check us out. Replays available at WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, we were talking about Dixie Carter and Hulk Hogan. And I just imagine in my head, if Hulk Hogan signed with WWE on October 2nd, and he shows up on Raw, maybe just as, I don't picture him being a wrestler or anything like that, but maybe like the new GM, maybe something like that. Vince McMahon hires Hulk Hogan to be the new general manager to take over power from Hunter and Steph. Horrible storyline, don't get me wrong, but I can just imagine him doing something like that. And anyway, the point is, he shows up in WWE, and his last appearance in TNA was Dixie Carter on her knees begging him not to go. I mean, it's just astonishing to me. It's astonishing that that's how they would book his exit.
You know, in another era, they would absolutely sign Hulk Hogan just for that reason. And, you know, since you said...
Now they don't care.
Well, exactly. Now, I mean, they couldn't even care less, no matter who it is. I mean, one thing you say about that story, there's one where if you wanted to bring him back and figure out a way with this whole thing about being good for business, Vince saying that to Hunter, obviously Hunter and Hogan do not get along. I don't think it's to the level of he and some other guys, but obviously he and Hogan, not the bestest buds in the world. But if you wanted to, you could actually pull that off and do something like that leading into, you know, WrestleMania season. That is not the worst idea in the world to try to shoehorn him back in.
All right, when we get back from the break, we're going to talk more about WWE, the SummerSlam pay-per-view business, what it means. ROH and New Japan at iPay-per-views. We'll talk about that. One went off without a hitch. One did not. Why? And, of course, a lot of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news. So stick around, everybody. Back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out, TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the Sirius Satellite Radio app. TuneIn Radio is available in the App Store. I believe it's free In a lot of places, maybe Android is free, and iTunes, you've got to pay a little bit, but it's a good app, and you can always check it out there. And iHeart.com, iHeartRadio, check the Talk Radio portal, and you can always get replays of the show there, as well as at WrestlingObserver.com. If you want a replay immediately after the show goes off the air, head to WrestlingObserver.com, and it'll be up there immediately, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 Eastern. So check that out at WrestlingObserver.com. Got a lot of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news to talk about here today.
But before we do, we should bring up our SiriusXM listeners, and we're happy about them as well. And also, hopefully, they're also enjoying Art Bell.
That's right. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 104, Indie Talk, Art Bell. Every night, Monday through Thursday, 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, replays immediately afterwards. This show is awesome. Did you hear the first few weeks, Mike?
I have. I've heard every single one, and I love the fact that on the weekends and Fridays and Saturdays, they're just playing all of them back-to-back overnight, too, so I fell asleep last night listening to it as well.
This man has not skipped a beat.
He is an old pro. I mean, he really is. I don't know. It's 40 years, however long it is he's been doing this. He and, you know, obviously Larry King's older now, but there are just some guys who they never lose it. And he, because of the subject matter he has, because of the way that he thinks, and because of the way he structured that show, it is a timeless, fantastic thing that will probably... It's going to be very difficult for me to believe that you couldn't put on any of these shows, much like any of his older ones, at any time in the future and still not be entertained.
Yeah, it's awesome. 104, Indie Talk, everybody. You can check out the Art Bell Show Monday through Thursday. ArtBell.com is the website. And if you head up there, there's a guest list for the coming week as well. And he's bringing a lot of the old classics back and getting those going. And then it'll be new guests, I believe, is the plan. So make sure you check that show out. It rules. All right, SummerSlam, the show this year, the pay-per-view, 298,000 buys internationally, and that is down from 358,000 last year. So down 60,000 buys from the year before. And the big question, obviously, Mike, is why? This year's show had two main events, basically. Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan for the title. John Cena and Daniel Bryan, and then Randy Orton cashed in. And then the Brock Lesnar CM Punk match. And last year's show was headlined by the Brock Lesnar Triple H match, coming off Brock breaking Triple H's arm. And the, I guess, a three-way CM Punk, John Cena, and the Big Show. But really, last year's show was a one-match show. And one-match show beat two-match show by 60,000 buys. And interestingly enough, the year prior, SummerSlam 2011, that did 296,000 buys. So if you take out last year's show, on average over the 3 years, we went from 296 to 298 with last year's show. I guess, was it an aberration? Was Brock Lesnar in a singles match against Triple H such an aberration that it bumped the pay-per-view up 60,000 buys? Or should this year's show also be at 60,000 buys, but for whatever reason, people just didn't want to see the show?
I don't know. It was really a surprise to me. I guess this is the lowest one since, I think, 1997. It just, I don't know if it was a financial thing with people. I think honestly, that's got a lot to play into it, because, again, it's not like they do, you know, they put in sometimes what we think the effort they should into promoting these things and building these shows up. To guarantee, and then maybe they fell back on their laurels a little bit of just thinking, okay, you know, because of the names who are on there, it's going to draw. And I think, yeah, I'm guilty of that, you know, by saying, you know, I thought just because of what was on there, it was going to draw, and it didn't. And I don't know. I really think just people, disposable income may have been a big issue into this one, because I don't, even though Brock Lesnar, you know, it's not like they've treated him like a lot of people thought they should, as far as, you know, giving him wins and things like that. I don't think his loss to Triple H or anything like that at WrestleMania, I don't think that was the issue for this, and I don't think there were matches on there that people didn't want to see. I just, again, I don't know. I really, really don't. And again, obviously Lesnar coming back against Triple H last year, you know, was a huge big deal, it, you know, but it's not like the six man was. And there, I mean, a lot of the booking leading into that show, from what I remember, was, you know, much worse than it was this year, if I recall correctly. I'd have to go back and check. But again, it just seems to be, right now to me, it seems to be an aberration. Again, I was still really, really surprised when it came out.
I don't know if I'd say nobody wanted to see this show, because obviously 298,000 people wanted to see the show. But last year's build for Triple H and Hunter was pretty simple. Brock broke his arm. Hunter made his big comeback, and they were going to have a fight. And it did very well. And this year's show, hindsight obviously is 20/20. Don't get me wrong. But when you look at how this year's show was built up, what did they do for Daniel Bryan and John Cena? Well, John Cena came out about a month earlier, and he said, "Who do you guys think should get the next shot?" And he pulled the audience. And the audience chanted Daniel Bryan. And so John Cena said, "All right, Daniel Bryan gets the next shot." He was gifted it. And I thought what they did, I see a lot of pay-per-views where it's like, okay, you guys really dropped the ball on this. I don't feel they really dropped the ball. But you are talking about a guy who got a championship match at SummerSlam as a gift. John Cena just decided, I'm going to give this guy a title shot. And maybe fans thought, well, you know, it'll be just another John Cena title defense. If this was really going to be something, it would have been a bigger deal than just John Cena saying you're next in line. Maybe they didn't buy that this was going to be a big pivotal title change, number one. And number two, with Brock Lesnar and CM Punk, this is not, and listen, I thought the match was great, and this is not a, how can I say this? I'm not going to say that I saw this going in because I thought it was going to do better than it did. But I do remember when they did some of the angles where Brock Lesnar just completely destroyed CM Punk. I remember the first time in particular when CM Punk came down to the ring and he'd been off for a while and he was wearing like shorts and I think a hoodie. But the point was he looked so skinny and he looked so frail. And Brock Lesnar came out and just absolutely obliterated this guy. And I remember thinking at the time, how in God's name are you going to try to sell CM Punk as a viable contender to Brock Lesnar? Because, and this is how they played it up in storyline. Brock did that video and he goes, look at what I look like and look at what you look like. A guy like you can't beat a guy like me. And here I am watching it on television with my own two eyes and it's like, I don't believe for a second that if this were real, and I realize, but you are supposed to think that, if this were real, right? I don't believe for a second that CM Punk is beating Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar is going to kill this guy. And the promos were great. I thought they did a good job building it up. But maybe at the end of the day, everybody watching on television, a lot of those people just looked at the match and were like, I don't buy CM Punk as a challenger to Brock Lesnar. I'm really not into this match. I don't know.
You're not supposed to think it's real. I think you're supposed to be able to suspend disbelief.
And yes. I couldn't.
I understand what you're saying on that end of it. But realistically, as wrestling fans, you know, you should know that the CM Punk thing and the angle and everything leading into it seemed to be hot enough and seemed to make enough sense where even with Brock saying that, you go, okay, well, how is CM Punk, who is the best in the world and, you know, one of the main stars of the company, how is he going to respond to this or get out of this or beat Brock? Again, that's why, again, when you talk about, to me, it's not like just Triple H made the difference last year and Brock coming back. Again, I think there's just, this is a little bit more of an aberration because of the way that feud was. And again, we'll talk about it after the break.
All right, we'll come back with this after the break because I got more to add as well, and we'll get Mike's thoughts. So hold the phone, everybody. Back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. We're talking SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, the buy rate for the show down significantly from last year. And Mike, where were you going before the break?
I just again, a little bit more, I just think there's a lot of aberration in this because Lesnar and Punk was great leading into it. You knew it was going to be a great match. You know, I think 99% of people suspended enough disbelief to know that Brock Lesnar would kill CM Punk in a real fight. But you know, they wanted to see it. I guess they didn't want to see it since it had dropped so much. But, you know, Daniel Bryan, even though he got a gift from John Cena, you know, again, even though it's not just live experience. The television viewers like Daniel Bryan, too. It's not like his ratings tank or anything like that when he's on there. So I think, you know, again, suspending enough disbelief that even though it was a gift, you know, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, and I thought it was feeling relatively special as far as positive vibes and feelings from the crowd as far as Daniel Bryan and going into that match of what the possibilities could be. Plus you had Triple H coming back. I don't know. I really think this was more of an aberration than anything. And no one should really, you know, Daniel Bryan will probably, anybody was going to take the hit from this, it would probably be Daniel Bryan. But I just don't think that's fair. And I don't think, it's tough for me to believe, again, that CM Punk and Brock Lesnar didn't have the rapt attention of, you know, a majority, 75%, I'd say, of WWE viewers. I guess maybe I'm wrong, but it's still a real surprise.
I do remember going to that show that I thought, you just can't beat Brock Lesnar here. I mean, if you want to do something at WrestleMania and have Brock Lesnar mean something, you can't beat the guy. Because going into it, he was 2-2. And I thought, really? You're going to have CM Punk beat Brock Lesnar, and then he's going to be 2-3? I mean, his drawing power is already waning. And to me, a guy like Brock Lesnar should be protected, and he should only lose to the absolute biggest stars. And granted, don't get me wrong, CM Punk is one of the biggest stars in the company. But again, I mentioned this on a show a few days ago, that to me, when you're a heel, yes, sometimes heels cheat, but even if you're a heel, you still need to beat the top guys. Sometimes you need to beat them clean in the middle and show that even though you're a bad guy, and even though maybe you're facing the top babyface star, on this particular day, you were the better man. And I remember that people used to always get on me with like Miz and CM Punk, and I would complain that these guys were always they were never pushed as serious main eventers because they could never actually beat anybody. And I always heard, but Brian, they're heels. Heels never win clean. Heels never beat John Cena. Heels never beat, you know, any of these guys. And then, of course, you know, Randy Orton gets the title as a top heel, and he beats everybody clean in the middle with his move. Everybody. So I don't want to hear anybody tell me that as a heel, you can't beat people. And going back to CM Punk now, CM Punk had the disadvantage of being really skinny going up against a big giant beast in Brock Lesnar. And even though the storyline was that CM Punk was the best in the world, you got to remember that even though he had a title reign that was 434 days long, all of the fans with their own eyes watched that title reign in which CM Punk could never really beat John Cena. He could never really beat most of the top guys. He backdoored his way into win after win after win. That's how he was portrayed during his title run. And so, to me, if CM Punk were a guy like, I'll just write a name, Triple H. Triple H was renowned. He beat everybody. He beat Stone Cold Steve Austin in the middle of the ring. He beat everybody. He beat babyfaces with his finish. He beat heels with his finish. He beat every single person with his finish. Everybody. And so when he went in there with Brock Lesnar, if you're looking at this like, okay, this is Triple H versus Brock Lesnar, these characters in this WWE universe, then you knew that, yes, Hunter maybe can beat Brock Lesnar because he beats everybody. But if you watched CM Punk over the last 2 years, I mean, did you really think that CM Punk could actually beat this guy clean in the middle of the ring? He never beat anybody. And I mean, he did a little bit more as a babyface, but still, I remember watching it and thinking, if you're gonna beat Brock Lesnar, CM Punk right now is not the guy that should be doing it. And I don't know, maybe it was the way they built it up. Maybe it was just the wrong match. Like I said, everybody's performances I thought were great. But I do remember thinking going in that it will be a mistake if CM Punk beats Brock Lesnar.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And then whether that was the but again, I don't know if you can draw that line in the, to maybe that being in some fans' heads on why they didn't decide to order the show. But yeah, you're right. And that's something that gets forgotten about in wrestling history. Everybody always goes, well, it's always Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen example is the one that people fall back to. But Ric Flair didn't get to be Ric Flair without, again, losing matches in the middle of the ring. I mean, Steve Austin, The Rock, Ric Flair, you know, all of these guys, you know, the big names in the past that did this night after night when they were on the road 7 days a week and, you know, working, you know, according to them, most of them, 450 days a year, which is amazing. They did this, and it didn't hurt them. It built them up because it's not about, you know, cheating to win or, you know, having, you know, bad things. You need to actually win matches. You have to actually have a reason to be there, whether you're slimy or not, and trying to hold on to it's a different story. But you should be able to beat a certain bit, you know, number of guys because, in theory, you're the head of the promotion. You're the world heavyweight champion. So there should be a reason that you're there. That was one. That's always the problem with to me with guys like The Miz. You know, and again, not for. And I understand. I love entertaining wrestling. I have accepted Rey Mysterio being a great example. I'm happy he got a run with the World Heavyweight Championship. But there is a level of truth in the people that go, you know, you should have a believable champion. You know, the Miz. I don't think The Miz can beat up anybody. You know, Alberto Del Rio was on the radio saying, you know, remember that around that time where there was a lot of pushback on The Miz, that it's hard to take him seriously? And it's true, and it's nothing against him, but it's hard to believe not only, you know, just because of the way he's been portrayed and the way he looks and the way he's won his matches as a heel, which he had been for most of his career, you know, leading up to the point he is now, how can I believe in him as heavyweight champion? It just, you can't, and I couldn't suspend disbelief for that one, so I don't know.
I just remember hearing people say, during the Miz's run, this was only a few people, granted, not everybody, but I heard people make the comparison of, well, what they're doing with Miz is exactly what they were doing with Ric Flair. And it was like, Miz ain't Ric Flair! Nobody is Ric Flair, except Ric Flair.
Put the exclamation point on that with that figure four, too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Same with when people go, well, you know, Rock could just, he could lose and lose and lose, and he was still over. And it was always like, well, guess what? No one's The Rock. The Rock was bigger than this business, which, by the way, that's a fact based on his movie success. One of the biggest movie stars in the world, in fact. No one is The Rock. If you find me a guy that is has the potential to be as big as The Rock and has the charisma and everything that The Rock had, then maybe, yeah, you can beat that guy. But whenever people said so-and-so, well, you know, they did it with The Rock. Well, that guy's not The Rock. Well, you know, they beat The Rock. Well, that guy's not The Rock. None of you are The Rock. Not a single person in WWE is The Rock. Not one person. So anybody that tries to use the excuse of, well, that's what they did with The Rock, it doesn't work like that. It will only work like that, like it worked with The Rock. It will only work like that with another Rock who does not exist right now. And the same thing with Ric Flair. If you want to get a guy and give him the title, and he's like the, you know, he's always running and he's cheating and he never wins, and you think he's still going to get over like Ric Flair, well, guess what? Unless he's Ric Flair, it ain't going to work. So for everybody else in the world, in order to get over, you got to beat people. And I'm always infuriated when I hear the comparisons. Well, that's what they did with The Rock. You know what else they did with The Rock? Rock went out and made movies that made millions and millions of dollars. Who else is going to do that right now? Okay, so they're not The Rock. Rock was larger than life. He was bigger than this business. And until you got another guy who's larger than life and bigger than this business, then you can't beat him right and left and expect them to still be over. What the hell did that have to do with anything?
Well, you know what? You can provide hope. Because if nothing else, even though he's The Rock now, he was Flex Cavana at one time.
So he was.
Gives everyone hope to keep working hard.
I don't know when the next Rock is going to come along. I may be dead before the next Rock comes along. But at some point, I'm sure the next Rock will come along. And then when he comes along, feel free to beat that guy. But until he comes along, You can't expect The Miz. No one expected Miz to be the next Rock, but I'm just throwing out a name. You can't expect The Miz or Daniel Bryan or anybody. You can't expect them to be the next Rock and beat them like you beat The Rock before they get there. They've got to be there first before you do all of this destruction in the ring. And believe me, Rock won his fair share of matches too over the biggest guys in the world, clean in the middle with his move. Don't forget that as well.
Well, when people say it won't happen, it'll happen one day. It may not get to the level of The Rock for quite some time, but, you know, Frank Gotch, Gorgeous George, I guess if you want to throw Luthez in there, you can, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, The Rock, it'll happen one day. It's just, like you said, you can use comparisons like that, same way you can do it with Ric Flair in his prime when it actually happens.
Quick thoughts on the ROH I pay-per-view. Have you seen it yet?
I have not, but then again, I guess I'm in the majority because there are lots of people that couldn't see it.
What happened?
Oh, didn't they have an issue with their iPay-per-view?
I thought
that was the free one, right?
I thought that was Ring of Honor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say New Japan?
I'm talking New Japan. Maybe I said Ring of Honor.
I thought you said ROH.
Maybe I screwed up. Wouldn't be the first time. All right, hold on, everybody. Hold on. Let's pretend that last 30 seconds didn't happen. I'm going to take us to break, and when we come back, I'm going to start all over again fresh. So hold the dial, everybody. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out. Tune in a radio app on your smartphone. That's a tune-in radio app. The Sirius Satellite Radio app works as well. You can check us out, Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. Search for either of those and you'll find us. Or check out the Talk Radio portal up at iHeart.com. iHeartRadio, 60 million subscribers. We're available up there. And if you just tuned in or you tuned in late, if you head to WrestlingObserver.com when the show is over, the replay will be up immediately after the show goes off the air, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. We have tons of replays up there. And in fact, if you subscribe to WrestlingObserver.com, it's $10.99 a month. We have 6,000 shows in the archives. For only $10.99 per month, you can have access to 6,000 radio shows. Not just archived shows. We don't just put this show in the archives. But every show that we do, which is 10 to 15 brand new shows every single week, I got two more shows I'm doing tonight. And you can only hear them if you subscribe to WrestlingObserver.com. So for $10.99, you get radio shows every single day, plus full access to the archives. Every show we have done dating back to 2005, 6,000 shows. So if you love this program and you only get to hear it once per week on Sirius Satellite Radio, you are missing out. Sign up at WrestlingObserver.com. You will never, ever run out of pro wrestling or mixed martial arts audio. In fact, if you go to WrestlingObserver.com right now, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest free radio shows. So if you only hear Wrestling Observer Live, you can check out Figure Four Daily, Wrestling Observer Radio, The Brian and Vinny Show. We got a lot of free shows up there on the right-hand side of the page. Check them out. And if you like what you hear, 6,000 in the archives. So check it out, everybody. It's worth the money. Now, Mike, we were talking about the New Japan iPay-per-view. Have you checked it out yet?
Yes, New Japan, the Destruction was the name of the iPay-per-view that took place at Kobe World Hall earlier on this morning. Super no vacancy, so that means it was a sellout.
By the way, explain that to people, because the way that Japan explains how many people were there, no vacancy doesn't actually mean no vacancy. Super no vacancy means no vacancy, correct?
Well, then there's also, if I recall correctly, Super Full House No Vacancy, which I believe Super Full House No Vacancy is literally they have people hanging from the rafters.
Wow.
Where it's standing room only in violation of fire codes and whatnot. That's what you have there. Then there's Super No Vacancy, which is what they like to say is a legitimate sellout. You know, that's the way it was. And then, you know, basically No Vacancy means Full House. Like, we could shove some more people in here, but we're not going to. And basically, I've always taken it to mean, and from how I've always viewed it, when I look at the pictures of the crowds and the announced attendance that they're claiming, those two things seem to have a lot to do with each other. If there's a bunch of empty seats and things like that, or there's some room and such, that will just be a no-vacancy show. When they actually show it, you know, relatively packed, then that's actually super no vacancy, which is what we had at Kobe today. To see basically what was a show that, if you wanted to be cynical, you could skip it. Now, New Japan's high pay-per-views are always really, really well done, and even if you don't speak Japanese or aren't a big fan of the Japanese scene, you could get into it relatively easily as far as knowing who the good guy is, who the bad guy is, and why they're actually fighting. But it was also a show where some things were going to come to a head that basically lead into later on this year, and then ultimately next January, where they had their annual Tokyo Dome show on January 4th. And the main event of this was Kazuchika Okada defeating Satoshi Kojima with the Rainmaker to make the fourth defense of his heavyweight championship, which... that was not a surprise. Even though Kojima has beaten Okada a couple times, including, you know, the last time around in the big G1 tournament that they had earlier on this summer, no one believed that Okada was going to lose to Kojima. So really, that result was never in doubt. And the big match associated with this match was also likely never in doubt, where Tetsuya Naito, who had won the G1 tournament, made a great run during that, and became the number one contender to Okada's title, which, you know, and again, the precedent was set last year with Okada winning the G1 and deciding to basically have his money in the bank and keep it until January 4th. Since that precedent was set last year, that's pretty much what the idea is going to be for New Japan every year, which it seems to be a great idea on paper, because you're always going to get this long thought out build to the title. Now, obviously, in the future, if there's somebody not at the level of a Naito or an Okada or one of the good wrestlers that New Japan has, there could be some pushback and they might have to change it. But as of right now, it's a pretty great idea. And he won the G1, Naito did, and has the number one contendership. And he defeated Masato Tanaka for Tanaka's NEVER title. The story behind that was Tanaka had beaten Naito a couple of times, including in the G1, and also kind of pushed him around in a match earlier on this spring. So it was really not in doubt for the fan that was paying attention even in the slightest bit that Naito was going to get the win here and obviously probably face off against Okada. But at the end of New Japan shows, oftentimes after a World Heavyweight title match, there's always somebody who steps up and challenges the champion. So there was a little, you know, doubt over would Naito win his match and go on and challenge Okada later on? Would it be somebody else? What are they going to do? And what ended up happening was Hiroshi Tanahashi came out to challenge Okada, which, again, lends more to the idea that Naito and Okada are going to be the New Japan January 4th main event, which, again, that show, to those who are unaware, is basically their WrestleMania every year, held at the Tokyo Dome. Again, it was a show, and also the semi-main event of the show, Shinsuke Nakamura, again, much like the other matches, this was basically a three-match series that he had with Shelton Benjamin, and, Nakamura beat Benjamin to retain his Intercontinental title. So again, these were all matches that seemingly were never in doubt, and ultimately that's what happened, and the favorites won, and again, good show. Most of the New Japan shows, for the money that you spend, the $20 or $24 or whatever it is that you spend for the shows, are well worth it, and this was another one. Again, nothing, you know, out of the park match of the year or anything like that, but a really, really good solid pay-per-view for the money. And hopefully I didn't confuse everyone there.
No. Now, I do want to talk before we go about the death of Leandro Souza. He was scheduled to fight at a Shudo show in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil this weekend. And he died during the middle of a weight cut. And allegedly, he had been required to drop a tremendous amount of weight. I forget the exact number of pounds, but it was significant. And allegedly, he had been using diuretics, and he was in a sauna. and he still had 3 more pounds to cut, if I recall correctly, and he passed away. And obviously there's been talk for a long time that eventually there's going to be a tragedy as a result of this crazy weight cutting. And in fact, there were tragedies in high school wrestling about 15 years ago, actually. 3 wrestlers during one season died. And they
college
made,
wrestling. That was God. That caused a shakeup in the NCAAs.
College wrestling, that's right. And they made some major changes. And college wrestling has moved on just fine with these weight-cutting changes. And the question, obviously, Mike, this did not happen in the United States. This was not a UFC fighter. So the feeling from a lot of people is it's not going to make any difference. It's not going to make any difference until this happens to a big-name star in UFC, which, God forbid, this ever happens. I have always been of the mindset that let's do something about this before something happens, but it seems that most people are maybe too accepting of the fact that we're going to have to wait until something does happen before people act on this. And I don't like that, personally, but what are your thoughts?
Me neither. But, you know, and I don't want to sound too laissez-faire about it, but yeah, it was going to happen. It's going to happen again. At some point, you know, the law of averages says it's going to happen on a UFC card. Probably won't be a major star or anything like that, but somebody who's really struggling, who really needs the spot, who's going to do whatever it takes, which includes something that has been romanticized on the Ultimate Fighter show, which is, you know, riding the stationary bike with the, having the suit on with the sweatpants and the sweatshirt over it in a sauna. What is a poor reaction, but what is a reaction on the other side always says, well, you know what, if you move it to weigh-ins to the same day, then guys are just going to do it to the same day and you're going to have the same problem. You're right. It's actually, and again, it's going to cost money, but it's one of those things where you have to send people out, you know, to watch these guys and monitor their weight. And there's weigh-ins that boxing and wrestling, or sorry, boxing and mixed martial arts do on the way up just to see how people are doing and to check in on them. But they're going to have to be more stringent with that and have to figure out ways where, you know, when it comes time to leading up to the fight, guys don't have to drop so much weight. And it's just, it's going to take a tragedy here for something to happen. But until that, you know, again, until that time comes, it's just something, unfortunately, you have to shrug off, because it's what, again, it's up to the individual to keep themselves safe, too, and to know their body and to have the people around them to, you know, act as a check and a balance to them, too, and to have their true best interests in mind. And again, until a tragedy happens here, this is the way it's going to be what it's going to be.
I've always been really annoyed when I've had to hear that, well, if we change this to same-day weigh-ins, guys are going to miss weight, title matches will fall apart, it'll be a complete disaster. To me, it's always like, actually, you know what? That won't happen, because we got to give people a little more credit, because if they know that if they miss their weigh-in the day of the fight, they lose their championship match, I don't believe that's going to happen. I mean, we have not seen college wrestling fall apart because of changes in the way that people have to weigh in and cut weight. I've been to a million jiu-jitsu tournaments where people also cut weight, and it's not like people left and right are being scratched from the competition because they can't make weight. They know what the rules are. You have to make weight the morning of the deal, and as a result, people just cut less weight because they know if I cut too much weight, I'm not going to be able to compete like I normally do. And if I miss weight, I'm not going to compete, because if you miss weight, you're scratched. And so I don't seem to see a problem in sports where they have same-day weigh-ins with it just being a complete disaster and the sport just grinds to a halt. No, people figure it out. And if you change the rules in mixed martial arts to same-day weigh-ins, or you're only allowed to cut X amount of weight, or you're only allowed to weigh X amount when you step into the cage as opposed to what you weighed when you weighed in, then it'll work, because people will figure it out, because people aren't stupid.
Hey, what reaction would you rather go with if I ask you this question? What would you rather see? Even though they're a pain in the butt now and title matches don't mean what they used to and all that stuff, more divisions where guys don't have to cut so much weight, like boxing, where you have 140, 147, 154-pound weight classes, and you go up from there, or Or do you feel okay telling a guy, you should, if you can't get to the proper weight and you're going to kill your body to do it, no matter what you are, you shouldn't be fighting?
I much prefer the latter.
Okay.
I much prefer the latter. I don't think there's enough shame being forced upon fighters who can't seem to fight people who weigh what they weigh. To me, if you're cutting 40 pounds to fight in a division, you should be shamed. Like, why can't you fight at your weight? Why do you have to cut 40 pounds? Why do you have to be a bully? Maybe that's what we need. Shame people into fighting at their normal weight. Anyway.
Also, taking care of yourself more and knowing it year-round, too.
Back in a moment, everybody. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, as we wrap the show up here today, we have a new pay-per-view revenue record set by an Alvarez, as many would have expected. Not myself, unfortunately. Canelo Alvarez.
Him
and Mayweather, the revenue record. Are you surprised?
Not at all. Your third cousin twice removed, if I remember correctly there,
right.
Canelo Alvarez. No matter what was going to happen, it was pretty obvious that a promotional tactic of this was going to be, you're not going to want to miss this show because it's going to be a record. We're going to set a record with this. Be a part of history helping us set this record. There was no doubt in my mind that they were going to announce this fight at 1.99, which is what I thought they would need to break the old record of De La Hoya and Mayweather. I even though that did 2.4 million buys, I kind of calculated out to 1.99, so I knew they were going to announce it around there. Now, whether it actually did that number or not to hit that record, I don't know. But legitimately, because of the price of the thing and because of the closed-circuit prices and things like that, there was no doubt that that thing was going to do, break the revenue record of De La Hoya and Mayweather. With that said, do I think it did? They're talking about it trending at 2.2 million. Do I think it's going to do that number legitimately? I don't think so. I really, really don't. But do I think it did incredibly well? Yeah, there's nothing to complain about whatsoever as far as, how much it did. Whether it's as hyped as they thought it was going to be, because they announced the whole fight as being, this could break the record of all time when the fight was first announced, and obviously the interest level was not there, and Canelo, unfortunately, wrong place, wrong time, facing Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Trying to find the genealogy of Canelo Alvarez to see if we, in fact, are second cousins twice removed. Because I actually do have a cousin who is a redhead. So it's not Canelo, but I'm going to need to investigate this. Maybe one of my brethren, one of my La Familia, set the pay-per-view record. Maybe we'll have the answer next week. We'll see. Want to thank everybody for listening. Head over to WrestlingObserver.com. So much more there, and we shall talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.